Well, I've been pondering this last month because I was asked to talk about my trip to Turkey in June with a Pacifica Institute. And it's a hard one to do from a pulpit because really, it's hard to get me out of here, but I just don't want to give a triptych. And I realized that what I was asked to talk about was not really just what I did on this trip to Turkey, but in some ways, why am I committed to interfaith work? And how do I, as a Christian, as a pastor, live out my hospitality to old people, really God's hospitality, to those I know and those I don't, to the stranger and to the friend? And that's kind of at the root of why I went to this trip. Well, I have to admit on myself just a little bit of history. I was one of those kids that always asked why. Why is the sky blue? Why can't I eat those mud pies I made in the backyard? Why do I have to go to bed now? And in school, I'd seek out the new kids and I'd want to know them. In church Bible study, I would always ask questions all the time. I must have drove the pastor crazy. I asked the questions, one, because I really wasn't listening well, but also because I was curious, because I wanted to know more. And my parents encouraged that kind of curiosity. They gave us books, all that we wanted to read. They brought us into little neighborhoods around Oakland and the Bay Area that kids in my neighborhood did not go to. And then my parents embarrassed me even more by talking to strangers. Really, people on the street, people in restaurants, and then they would listen to their responses. My other parents shouldn't do that. I should have been shopping at Nordstrom's, but no, we were at Swan's Market in Oakland. See, my parents didn't travel far. I mean, once we drove to Alaska in a station wagon. I don't want to talk about that trip because I'm still getting therapy for it. But they had this sense in our own little area about where could we meet and encounter the other and how could we try their foods. So when I got to seminary some 20 years later, I got a chance to go to a trip to Russia, the former Soviet Union, with the National Council of Churches. And I said, yes, hadn't been anywhere except Tijuana. Woo-hoo. And I went on this trip. And while I was excited, it's the first time I had been anywhere where I did not speak the language. I couldn't read it. I couldn't do anything on my own and had to follow the directions of others for my kind of basic survival. And I remember going to one country church. It was an Orthodox church, and this pastor comes out. His name was Father John, and I think he was ancient. Even he really was, not just because I was young. And he carries with him bread with salt on it, wrapped in a kerchief. It's a sign of hospitality. And he does a welcome to us that the translator gives. And I notice the women behind him are crying. They're weeping. And we're not that exciting to look at. And finally, I ask the translator, why are those women weeping? And Father John says, they have not seen U.S. citizens since Leningrad was liberated, and you saved them. And they are remembering all their sons and fathers and brothers who died and hope that because they see you, it will not happen again. See, that man was living hospitality. And I found by worshiping in an Orthodox way, which is sung liturgy, there's mystery, icons, you don't even have chairs, that at time, yes, I was very uncomfortable, but it also enlarged my understanding of how the people of God worship, and it developed a stronger sense of why I was Presbyterian in my own faith. So when I went back to campus, I saw international students and really saw them and talked to them, not the polite, hello, how are you? We're so glad we have you here. I got to know them. See, that church changed me, that trip. So it's no surprise when I got to San Francisco here, I started meeting every Presbyterian that would have a meal with me. I met the other Christian pastors soon. I got invited to be a part of the Chinatown pastors lunch group. I don't know why. But Father Chuck at the Paul's Church taught me more about living in this neighborhood than anyone else. And then I think it was Ted Chow invited me to the interfaith breakfast. I made excuses why I couldn't go one because it was like at 6 a.m. and it cost like $50. He said, no, I'm paying for it. I thought, oh, yay, I get to go. And I went, and there was such a diversity of people at this interfaith prayer breakfast. And then I found out there was a Thanksgiving Day interfaith service a couple days later, and I went. And then I got hooked. And then I started going to the 8 o'clock meeting on the second Tuesday at St. Mark's Church. It happens. You all are invited. Who's gone? You've gone. And Sydney, you've gone. It's a great thing. You should go. I'm going to push it when it starts up again. And I sat at these tables with these amazing, diverse religions and people of San Francisco. And I had done interfaith things before where we would have prayer services and we'd try to say holy things without not saying the name Jesus. So everything was just kind of milky and we offended no one and bored everyone. But at this group, we start out every meeting with this statement. This is an interfaith community. Whatever our individual belief, it can be freely expressed with no apologies. If you're invited to offer a prayer in this setting, it should be offered according to the tradition which you identify. If you're invited to speak on a subject from a perspective of our tradition, feel free to do so without offending those who come from another tradition. We come together as people of faith to learn from each other, that we might better understand the multiplicity of faith traditions in our city and our world. That's a kind of stunning statement. Say authentically who you are and pray and teach from that perspective. And then maybe we can do work in the city together for justice and for peace and for all people. Now, I've learned a lot about other faiths. Some of it I've learned because I asked questions. And many times the questions were so ignorant because I didn't know any better. They'd say, well, let me tell you how it really is, Maggie. Or I'd awkwardly go in a place and someone would help me out of it. And I've been learning about other faiths. One of them I'm learning a lot about is what it means to be a Muslim, which I knew absolutely nothing about. My first friendship started with a young woman named Farah. Farah is probably 30, Iftikhar, don't you think? She's really young. And do you know why we're friends? The mutual love of food. We will go out to do restaurants, and we'll eat anywhere, and our friendship has grown, and I've learned about her, and she's learned about me in that way. And so when I was asked by the Pacifica Institute to go to Turkey a couple years ago, I couldn't. It's like, oh, shoot. And then when I was asked again this year, I looked at the dates and they were asking me to be gone on Pentecost. I wrote them back and said, you know, I really can't. Pentecost, big thing for us Christians. And you know what? They replanned the trip so I could go. And so I went. I knew a little bit about the group that sponsored this, the Pacifica Institute. They're all over the U.S. They are a group of Turkish Americans who engage in a variety of civic and cultural activities, discussions, and dialogue. They hope by sharing an insight and understanding will create real opportunities for change and for working together. And so I tried to prepare for this trip. I went to a meeting and I met most of the 9 other participants. They were nice enough. I learned that I got the mobile number of the man named Mumat who was leading my trip. And he said, when you get to Turkey, just call me and I'll pick you up at the airport. I went, okay. So I bought my ticket to Turkey. I got there. I got through customs. And then I forgot. Oh my God, I'm in a country where I do not speak the language, I don't know what I'm doing, and I don't even know the name of the place I'm staying at. So brave little me goes to the information desk and said, can I buy a phone card? He said, yes, with Turkish lira. So I go to the ATM machine, and then I go and I get the phone card, and I go to the phone to dial the number. I cannot do it. I really can't. So I go to the information desk and I say, can you help me dial the phone? And it's like, huh. So he helps me and I go back. I still can't do it. And I'm getting a little distressed, you can imagine. And these two older women with full scarves see me, and they want to help me, but they don't speak English, and I don't speak Turkish. So I'm, you know, how do you do that in sign language? Idiot, phone. So they get their nephew or a son or a grandson, and he speaks a little bit of English, and he tries the phone card and the number. It doesn't work. So he gives me his cell phone and says, you call. I don't know how to dial. So he dials for me, and I can imagine the phone call. Hello? There is a fairly agitated, tired American woman who needs to speak to you. And he hands me the phone, and I said, here I am. I'm in the airport. And he says, I see you. It's the first kind of generous hospitality I encountered in Turkey. I've preached and heard about hospitality in the Middle East, but I had no idea. It came in big and small ways. Like when I was trying to use a restroom, you put a coin in at the bus station, I couldn't even get in. I was using the wrong turnstile, so a nice person just said, didn't speak, but understood, so I was able to go in. It was a kind little gesture. Or I remember when I was at a place walking through hot springs, a beautiful place where you follow this hot stream down, and there's all sorts of people with their shoes off, some with swimming suits, everyone just talking, and I'm with our leader and his 9-year-old daughter, and a young man comes up to Mutman and starts talking to him. And I ask him later, what did you guys talk about? And he said, well, this young boy, probably about 12, asked me if I was Turkish, and I said, no, I'm American. And he said, well, why are you here? And the man says, because this is a wonderful place to be. And the boy says, yes, it is. It is delightful. And then the boy says, I am glad you came to Turkey. Thank you for coming to my country. Peace. And then he left. Would that ever happen? A 12-year-old saying to an adult, thank you for coming to our country. And then I went into people's homes. It was one of the gifts of this trip, to have meals and even to stay with folks. And that was stunning, because here they do. It's a stereotype, but it's true. Turkish people love to eat, and they're fabulous cooks. And so I went to people's homes, and they would lay out like Thanksgiving-type spreads. And the first one I went to, they had all this food, and I ate all of it. And then they brought a whole nother round of food. And I ate all of that. And then there was dessert. And God bless my soul, I ate all of that. And then we would sit down and have tea and have conversations. There was no hurry. And again, the meal in people's houses were lavish. And sometimes we were so full we couldn't eat. But the leader of our troop said to me, we need to eat because we need to accept the hospitality. And I have an ability to eat past my comfort level, and I did. Because it was my way of taking this gracious gift. And I wondered if someone came to my house, what would the feast be like? See, I was invited, we were sponsored there by a group called Afeta. It's kind of, as close as I can tell, it's like a civic Muslim group. These are people from all different mosques who come and work together. They follow the teachings of a man named Mr. Gulen. He is a Turkish preacher and teacher. He writes that the Muslim community has a duty for service, a duty to be involved in the common good in the community and in the world, and they seek interfaith dialogue with Jews and Christians and seek to be hospitable. It's really interesting. Now, I don't understand much, and I'm not going to talk, but I just want you to know just a little bit of this. This group has a strong emphasis on education. I went to elementary schools and high schools and many universities, all private from this group. It was a rare thing in Turkey. And you wonder, why did they do all these universities? Well, here's an interesting fact about Turkey. This is rough, but I think I'm pretty much right. They have about 2 million high school students that apply to go to college every year. You have to take 3 or 4 entrance exams. 2 million students a year. And there are 350 community college spaces and about, oh, shoot, okay. No, it's okay, I got some more, but that was my warning. And then they have about 350 community colleges and about 250,000 four-year colleges. So how, do you see, it's like half, 1.5 million kids cannot get to college. So they started these universities and these primary schools so kids would have test scores good enough to get into colleges in rural places and out-of-the-way places. And they teach these young people ethics. They teach them to be involved with each other. Like, you go to the cafeteria and you buy tea, and you buy tea for 3 or 4 people if you have money. So if someone doesn't have money and they go to the cafeteria, they just ask for a tea and there's tea for them. It's that kind of ethics. They're raising amazing young people. Well, I get my lining because there we go, I talk about too much. What I did find out about this group is they do an amazing amount of community service. It's like our one great hour of sharing, but bigger. And they, for the Syrians in that country, have already given $28 million for Syrian relief for the people within Syria, that are coming from Syria to Turkey. $28 million. And they build hospitals in places like Africa, all over. They do disaster relief in a way that you could not imagine. And what I loved most about this trip is I got to know more about the Muslim faith. Because I traveled with 4 Muslims, and the wives, they kind of got to like me. And I could ask these questions like, I know it's inappropriate, but can you tell me why you wear scarves? I don't want to ask, but is that a child who's having a circumcision celebration? It looks like it over there. And they would tell me. And the men would share with me their faith, and I learned what it meant to be a person of faith. And I am thankful for that. So I went on this trip to aerate my soul, to remember what it's like not to be in control, because I don't like that very much. I had to learn what it means to accept the generosity of other people because I'm usually just the one who gives it. How good it was for me to learn to accept care and generosity. And I was a stranger and they treated me in an amazing way. So friends, maybe you too can remember that no one is a stranger to God and you don't have to go to Turkey. You can just walk down the street. And how do you share that love of Christ by being welcoming, by being open? And my hope is that we as Christians and Muslims and Jews and every other group can work for justice and peace for all God's people. Wouldn't that be nice if that's what they heard about us? Presbyterians and the mosque down the street are working to end violence. Those are the kind of things that I think will please the heart of God and will make us look more like the one that we follow. May it be so.